Now, for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'm going to spend the next 3 weeks consecutively on John Lennon, the murder of John Lennon, the cold-blooded gangland slaying of John Lennon. I'll talk this evening about his political and controversial life and the behavior that cost his life. Next week, I'll talk about the methods to conceal political assassinations as applied specifically to John Lennon and similar patterns to other assassinations I've studied. And finally, we'll make an appeal to people who are concerned and who care, who've seen too many murders in their lifetime, to get busy and find out who is doing these and what we can do about it. I do want to begin this program with a record you've heard many times this week, but I want it on the tape for this week called Imagine. Last week on this program, I asked some questions when the program began about 1981, when Ronald Reagan and the team move into the White House. How will we remember 1980, and who will stop assassinations and murders and genocide and torture? And I had a long list of questions that are on a printed sheet that you can send for if you don't have it. People that subscribe to the tapes get it with the tapes. I also said the assassination teams from the early 60s are all in place, and the murderers are moving up in power, as Ronald Reagan takes over in the Senate in California and the Senate and the House and committees in Washington, D.C. Strom Thurmond, the member of the Senate who wanted the Lennons deported in the 70s, early 70s, on the most flimsy charges, is now head of the Judiciary Committee. Well, Sunday night, I posed some questions for the end of this year and trouble spots in the world and listed them. And 24 hours later, John Lennon was dead. And within 2 days, that body of flesh, whatever it is, was cremated and delivered to Yoko Ono in a jar. And what remains is what we remember and what we do with it. The flesh is gone, but the memories, of course, live on. Our family were fortunate, I suppose, of all the people listening tonight who take the tapes, maybe we were one of the few that had the opportunity to meet the Lennons. We spent the day with John and Yoko Lennon in San Francisco at the Stanford Court. My first article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, about Watergate, had just come out that week, and they called immediately to Carmel and invited us to spend the day with them. We were Beatle fans from the time he first came with the others to Ed Sullivan's program, and we took our children to Candlestick Park for their very, we didn't know it'd be their last concert, but we took them October 29th in 1966, and they left and went to Great Britain, and that was the last time the group was seen together. We also took all our children, we had 7 seats for every concert at the Monterey Pop, summer of 69, and they saw and heard people like Janis Joplin and Otis Redding and Jimi Hendrix and Mama Cass, the Mamas and Papas, and others. And the music scene has been very much a part of our family life through all of these turbulent years. We enjoyed the music. We learned from it. It freed us from a lot of things. And I have a lot of emotions, of course, about the Lennons and what happened this week that neatly ties up this era. At one time, they considered renting our home in Carmel, California. Yoko's husband, Mr. Cox, had kidnapped her daughter, and she was supposed to be, they believed, at Wood School in Carmel. She was seen at Carmel Beach, and they sent a friend of theirs who was with them when we visited down here to look at the house to see if they could use our home and live here and see if they could locate her daughter. But at the end of the summer, the trail grew cold and they weren't here any longer, so there was no reason for them to move to Carmel. My first issue of The Realist that introduced me to the Lennons, or the Lennons to us, had a cartoon that Paul Krasner had in there, Rose America's Baby, and it was a takeoff of the American situation, the political situation at the time in the summer of 1972, and it's ironic to know that Rosemary's Baby was actually filmed at the Dakota Apartments where the Lennons live. There are all kinds of ironies and situations that come to mind at a time like this. When I heard John Lennon was shot, I had to deal with it this week in 4 different compartments of my mind. One, what the Beatles did for me personally, for May Brussel, with 5 children, ages 1.5 to 14, and the freedom that their lifestyle gave to me personally and helped me grow. I wasn't a teenager. I wasn't a runaway from home. I was a married woman with 5 children, but deeply moved by 3 influences in my life, one Virginia Woolf, the other Henry Miller, and the other the Beatles, and the rock music scene along with the Beatles. Then I thought of the relationship of the Lennons and having the opportunity to meet them and know them personally, and then I had to deal with my anger at them for taking 5 years off to find themselves, to accumulate extreme wealth, to pull out, to take care of the baby, to find that inner self, because there wasn't 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 days that I thought there was a luxury of doing that introspection. I did that kind of thing when the family was asleep, or I was through with my work, or taking a hot bubble bath at night, or going down to Big Sur, or camping, or whatever. The road that we're going into World War III, the inevitable atomic war that this government is building up for was so apparent, and the murders were so apparent of people who spoke up for peace, that it was really a luxury to take this time out. And while he was close to his child, the 5 years trying to find himself, and then comes forward and says, yeah, I'm emerging. I spent 5 years with my child. I had five children and had to deal with the politics of the time and my children also as a researcher, as a writer, doing the radio shows, reading, studying, and still dealing with a family. And then, of course, you have to deal with the news media and the blatant lies they publish right after these kinds of murders. And while I'm not going into the evidence of the assassination this week, there's enough to tell you right now how the media is covering it, and we'll go more into this David Mark Chapman later this evening and in the next couple of weeks. But we have to deal with the news media, the brainwashing, the lone nut, the single coup, the easy story that people want to accept. Yoko Ono wrote a poem in 1963, in the autumn of 63. She doesn't date it, whether it began before John Kennedy was killed or after, but it's called Collecting Peace, and this is what she wrote. Collect sounds in your mind that you have overheard through the week. Repeat them in your mind in different orders one afternoon. And thinking of that poem, and we have her collected poetry, I began to think of things that I had heard during the week that came to my mind. John Lennon, Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, Otis Redding, Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Duane Allman, Mama Cass Elliott, Graham Parsons, Mark Bolan, Keith Moon, Paul Kossoff, Jim Reeves, Barry Oakley, Tim Buckley, Jim Croce, Richard Farina, Donald Rex Jackson, the manager for the Grateful Dead, Michael Jeffrey, the manager of Jimi Hendrix, Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles, Vinnie Taylor of the Sha-Na-Na on the eve of a big concert they were going to, Paul Williams, choreographer for the Temptations, Pamela Morrison, the wife of Jim Morrison, Rod McKiernan, Pigpen, known as Pigpen of the Grateful Dead, Phil Oakes, Sal Mineo, Meredith Hunter, and the ritual killing at Aldemont Festival. I wrote a chapter for an article called Helter Skelter, Give Me Shelter. From the Beatles till Altamont, that was the concert where Melvin Belli, Jack Ruby's attorney, who I mentioned often on this program, the attorney for Mussolini and Mrs. Hermann Göring, hired the Hells Angels, who did the ritual killing of Meredith Hunter before a camera, to show the world that the peace lovers had a violent festival. It was really the end of the authentic rock festival. Steve Parson, lead singer of the Children, Jimmy Reed, Ricky Valens, J.P. Richardson of the Big Border, Rennie Van Zant and Steve Gaines of the Leonard Skinner Group, Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols, who was singing anti-Nazi songs, John Bonham of the Led Zeppelin, Nearly Dead, the third mysterious man when Richard Pryor caught fire, Bob Dylan's near-fatal crash on the motorcycle. He survived. It wasn't like Richard Farina, who didn't survive, who died in Carmel Valley. Stevie Wonder almost died. Eric Clapton, the Dave Mason Band, and the Weavers were nearly dead. The FBI had documented plans to destroy their group. And along with them, the original murderer, Lenny Bruce, and others, Bonnie Morney, Larry Williams, and Bon Scott, the lead singer of AC/DC, the Australian rock group. I'm not talking about politicians, I'm talking about musicians. Some plane crashes, some automobile crashes, some allegedly overdoses, most of them on the eve of new big successes, bigger records, every reason to live. Many of them anti-establishment, Janis making fun of Port Arthur, Texas, and Jimi Hendrix screwing the guitar and telling the establishment to stick it and shove it. There were all kinds of ways to die. There's ways to skin a cat. But John Lennon was the cruel similar to John Kennedy, on the street, not overdosed like Elvis Presley, his doctor was almost charged with murder, but gunned down like a dog as he was ready to emerge from his own private life. And this broadcast also is for Bonnie Brussel. 14 years old, this is the first radio program of mine on Sunday night since John Lennon was murdered, and it's the 10th anniversary of my own daughter's murder, along with many children and siblings of researchers and writers and politicians. We paid our dues many times over. So, Yoko, we know what sorrow is. The dog that I got information about who arranged that accident here on the Monterey Peninsula is now under indictment for the wrong reasons, an ab scam, but he'll get off because he's one of the biggest fixers of the mob and all the other murders and fits right into this picture. So I know from brutal experience that these things stay a long time and they recur, and they'll recur until we decide that we've had enough. I don't know when your bottom line is who you have to see killed until you say, I'm ready to fight back. But at some time, you're going to have to decide who it is that's going to be off that you're going to stand up and get mad about. Mort Saul wrote in his book, Heartland, about my expose of various murders, and he wrote how many have to die before some Americans realize that murder is not a way of life. Too many have lost America because they brought her their lust but could never love her. And then he criticized Hugh Hefner, who attacked Mae Brussel, he said, who is an assassination researcher who pursues these murders selflessly. And he asks the question, when are we going to stop this? Mort said, I started the battle early. That's when he started investigating the murder of John Kennedy. The enemy isn't political in nature. It's insanity, which I combated through my purpose. And he tells how hard it was for America to understand what is happening. Mort Saul asked a few years ago in that book, is it too late for America? How many lies before you belong to the lies? You can't return to your own lines. They don't recognize you. You are made different by the company you keep. Nixon reminds you of what you have become. That was written several years ago. Life is a series of woven threads, and you put them together, and pieces fit together, and patterns and designs, and you get impressions of these fabrics depending on the colors and hues and the way they weave and the lives that weave in and out. But social change, people like John Lennon and the Beatles or those others that I mentioned and listed that have died young at the prime of their career making change, social change is difficult. It's hard to do. Breaking those chains, knowing each other, loving each other, sharing each other, sending the message that peace is possible, that war is wrong, is difficult to get into people's minds. They associate you with the enemy when you don't want to fight or kill other people. What's wrong with you? Are you queer? Are you a coward? Are you a communist? They don't see that the only way to survive and enjoy anything in this world is through peace. And people who want to make change are gunned down. And brutally, it came to all of us this week. Carl Sandburg wrote a poem that is one of my favorites, Advice of a Father to a Son Nearing Manhood. And he said, life is hard, be steel, be a rock. And that's true. And then he said, life is a soft loam, be gentle and go easy, because brutes have been gentled where lashes failed. And he referred to the way frail flowers come and shatter split rock. I think of that often when I drive down Highway 1 or up on the hill where I live, and I see these poppies coming out of nowhere, out of rock, and you know that it works. And he advised in his poem to sons to take time off and be alone often and get to know yourself, which was what Lennon was doing the last 5 years. And don't tell white lies and keep protective fronts. Tell him solitude is creative if he is strong and the final decisions are made in silent rooms. Be different from other people. And this was what Lennon was saying. If it comes natural and easy, being different, Carl Sandburg had advised, let him have lazy days seeking his deeper motives and let him seek deep from where he was born so that he may understand Shakespeare and the Wright brothers and Pasteur and free imaginations bringing into a world that resents change. And John Lennon exemplified that kind of a challenge to the world, the Beatles, all of them. I don't want to single him out, but he is the one who was killed, and he is the one that took this kind of advice and went off by himself and came out optimistic and was emerging with a young son and a wife and recording and was gunned down in New York. I wrote an article for a national magazine several years ago. They wanted on the killing of the rock musicians, the government documents that they were being harassed and suppressed, and then the top boss of the magazine killed the story. They paid me for it, and I kept the rights, and maybe I'll rewrite it now with John Lennon's name to the list. But the managing editor of the magazine called me this week about a possible story on the murder of John Lennon. So I sent them another resume of what I would put into the article, and this is what I put as my resume. These are the subjects that I would include. It would be a one-page resume of what I would do if they want to do it this time. The assassin, Mark David Chapman, was a tool identical to other political zombie murderers. D'entente and peace are lethal words in a society that has been determined since 1919 to make war against the Soviet Union. Rock music and musicians were becoming the largest social, cultural, and political force for world peace. This energy, talent, and enthusiasm was spreading around the world. Operation Chaos and other federal government programs were formed to disrupt, reject, and eliminate the combined skills of too many. They did a good job. Their project has worked until now because of inaction and apathy of both the victim's family and their fans, and the crimes are concealed by the mass media. Lennon's murder today is being compared to John Kennedy's. The war in Southeast Asia escalated November 24, 1963, with no known provocation. It was planned in advance for that date. At the time that John Lennon was murdered, November 9, 1980, the United States is on the brink of war in Poland and the Middle East. My goals for this article would be four things. One, the motive, the reasons for killing John Lennon, and I listed four motives. His anti-war capability of gathering us together again, his capability to do it one more time, his anti-establishment attitude, his anti-Christ statements he made years ago, and his anti-macho perspective of life. As against the Clint Eastwoods and the John Waynes, he was a man who could tender and take care of a child and get him prepared for life in the home, in the milieu of loving parents, bake his bread, write his songs, make love, and be creative, and work for peace. And it's those things that the establishment can't tolerate. The motive, as I say, for killing him was the anti-Christ, his position on religion, anti-war, anti-establishment, and anti-macho. Secondly, I would compare Mark David Chapman to the other political killers, the smirk, the loner, the mysterious wife, the unemployed with money, who travels around continents to Beirut, Lebanon, Switzerland, London, Southeast Asia, the Jesus freak, the good boy, the anti-Lenin politics. Thirdly, I would give documented proof that government agencies dislike the entire music culture, the rock musicians, the anti-war, anti-establishment gatherings, and document the historical pattern set in Germany from 1922 to 1933 of similar murders systematically done to silence opponents of World War II, and then list the other artists that were wiped out. That is a resume I sent to them. If they want it this time, I'll write it for them. If not, I may just sit down and put it into one book. Mark David Chapman traveled all over the world, as I say, London, Switzerland, Southeast Asia. He was in New York in October. He's back again in November. He traveled with weapons. He's a mystery person. And similar to all the other political assassinations, to give you an example of the kind of similarity that runs through, all the other people that were picked up as suspects or the alleged assassins, such as Lee Harvey Oswald, James Earl Ray, Sirhan Sirhan, all had doubles, multi-names, aliases, a lot of money, traveled other continents, allegedly were loners, had a lot of friends, but we're told that they did this one act alone out of some anger or particular frustration. This case, they're trying to say that he thought he was the Beatle and identified and killed the bad part of him. There was a picture taken of John Lennon signing a record album with Mark David Chapman. And when Lennon was killed, the photographer called the New York police, and they refused to accept the picture. They didn't want it. They said, don't bother. Then his wife was told, according to the Los Angeles Times, on the telephone, don't release any other pictures of Chapman. Then in Miami, in Dade County, they had a mix-up on a computer, and he used to live in Miami. And the New York court said that erroneously he had a criminal record, and the computer picked up the name of the fugitive, the last name, the date of birth, the race, the height, and the slang suspect, and it seems that there was another person down in Florida that fit all of this. So there was a mix-up in the courts. So there probably, obviously, was another Mark David Chapman. And when he was arrested, I saw something on television which I haven't seen since the stories when Lee Harvey Oswald was taken out of the theater in Dallas, Texas. They threw a coat over the Mark David Chapman that went into the jail, and you didn't see the face of the person. So the police department at first didn't want any photographs. They notified the wife, don't give pictures, and they protected his face. Now, you've read recently in the newspaper about the missing Oswald. Marina Oswald is 99% sure that the person in the grave isn't Lee Harvey Oswald. Next week, we'll go in more into the physical evidence, the subterfuge, the use of doubles. But this is the same kind of hanky-panky. I'm giving you one example tonight, and I don't want to dwell too much on it this evening, of the subterfuge in the Lennon case. Why tell Mrs. Chapman not to release these pictures? Maybe they weren't going to bring this one in. Maybe they had another zombie who would take the rap and be killed. If somebody hadn't taken that picture in front of the Dakota Apartments and gave it to the New York Daily News or a newspaper there, why did the police refuse to accept the picture? Why did they come out with a computer readout of identical information from Florida and then have to backtrack and apologize in the courts about a past record? This Mark David Chapman did live in Florida, and Oswald had doubles in Florida, and I'm working on a book. He had doubles down there, and they were withholding pictures. They covered his head. When Lee Harvey Oswald was taken from the theater when he was arrested after John Kennedy was killed in Dallas, Texas, in November 1963, he said, in quotes, "Why should I hide my face? I haven't done anything to be ashamed of." And a coat was thrown over his face. And later it did turn out that there were three other Lee Harvey Oswalds with identical faces. So we still don't know who was in the theater because there is no photographic record of this person leaving the theater. Well, that's the way the coat was thrown over this Chapman's face. They had a description exactly, a computer readout in Florida. He lived in Florida. The police didn't want the photograph on site. Now, you would think that the New York police squad, if they weren't on part of the subterfuge, would accept any pictures because maybe there were other people in the background with him or somebody that drove him there. But it's this kind of subterfuge that runs through the assassination of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the shooting of George Wallace, and the mysteries of Chappaquiddick. The political assassinations have a pattern that never fails. It comes through at times like this, and that's one reason that I'm comparing the shooting of John Lennon to the shooting of John Kennedy, because there are these similarities that don't wash away, and they involve the FBI computer readouts or the police department, and the subterfuge that those people investigating it should be working on, but they cover up for whatever reason, and the reason involves the assassins themselves, the people that send this guy halfway around the world, all the way around the world and back, and he ends up at the Dakota Apartments. It's 30 minutes now. For those that have the cassettes, we'll turn those over. I'll take a break. It's Mae Brussels. We'll be back in 1 minute.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with...